I'm going to try to cover two grounds very briefly, and then since we want to end promptly so that the other program can continue, Amy is very nicely going around getting questions from people so that we can try to address your real concerns. First, the two issues I want to address are, one, the charge that the FBI is allegedly investigating, and two, what grand juries are. In 1996, a bill was enacted, the Material Support for Terrorism, which basically said people cannot support terrorism in this country. In June of this year, a really bad decision was entered by the Roberts Court, and it's called Humanitarian Law Project versus Holder. And I just want to give you an idea of the facts of the case. The Humanitarian Law Project said, we want to be able to help the PKK, which is the Kurdistan Armed Group, and the lawsuit was filed about 12 years ago, so at that time the Tamil Tigers in Sri Lanka were still operating. We want to be able to help these two organizations and show them an alternative to the use of armed struggle. So we want to give them education about how to use the UN and other methods to resolve struggles as peaceful ways rather than through the use of armed struggle. Regarding the Tamil Tigers, they wanted to help them with the issues about tsunamis. The US Supreme Court said, under no circumstances can you do this, because no matter what you do, no matter what your motives are, you are supporting terrorism. This is a very broad definition. I mean, and it sort of boggles the mind when you think that the Supreme Court said an organization and individuals who want to try to teach armed groups how to use peaceful methods of struggle rather than engaging in armed struggle is actually supporting terrorism. That's what we're dealing with. And I think the case that we have here is at the test case to see how far can the FBI and actually Holder, the U.S. Attorney General, go in basically prohibiting people in this country from supporting and being in solidarity with struggles in other countries. But before I get into that, I want to talk briefly about the whole issue about the grand juries. And grand juries are not that well known. They have historically been a tool of political repression, used against political activists, used against particularly the Puerto Rican independence movement. And there is very little that we can gain from grand juries except for standing up and objecting to them and trying to organize against them. I want to give a few historic examples of the use of grand juries. In 1936, the leaders of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party were subpoenaed from Puerto Rico to come to the United States. They took a position that in no way would they cooperate with a U.S. grand jury since they were fighting for independence from Puerto Rico. The then Secretary General of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party, Don Juan Antonio Corretea, refused to testify, was found guilty, and was held under contempt and sent to U.S. jails for 2 years. Since that time, the Puerto Rican independence movement has taken a position that they will not testify before any U.S. grand juries. It's not an issue of knowing something or not knowing something, it's an issue of cooperating with a government that is trying to intimidate, investigate, stop a struggle for independence. Particularly in the 70s and 80s, there were a whole series of Puerto Ricans and actually Mexican and North American supporters who were called before grand juries sitting both in New York and in Chicago, also investigating the Puerto Rican independence movement. People consistently refused to testify before the grand juries, declaring them to be illegitimate. People from Chicago actually were sent to jail for a minimum of 5 months, and some people were sentenced from the southwest of the United States who had been called to a grand jury here for 2 years. Grand juries were also used, throughout U.S. history they've been used, but I just want to give one other example. At the height of the Vietnam War, during the Vietnam War, over 100 grand juries were called to investigate, allegedly to investigate the Vietnam War, or aspects of the anti-Vietnam War movement, I should say. And just to give you one example of both the power and the real nature of the political use of grand juries is in, I believe, 1971, a 19-year-old woman, Leslie Bacon, who was very active in the anti-war movement, particularly in Washington, D.C., and which was organizing a series of huge demonstrations, was called and forced to go to Seattle for a grand jury. She did not. She also refused to testify. 1,000 people were subpoenaed to grand juries during the Vietnam War, people who were active in the anti-Vietnam War movement. Briefly, this is what happens. If you're called to a grand jury, and I mean, their grand jury is here right at 26 in California, allegedly investigating felonies. It's not, their grand juries are not only used in political cases, though they can be very intimidating and coercive in general. But if you are called before a grand jury, and you go to the grand jury, you do not have a right to have your attorney in the room with you. So if you're asked a question, you have the, you can leave the room and ask your attorney what you, to consult with your attorney, but you have no right to have an attorney there. So the grand juries are basically run by either the state's attorney or the U.S. attorney, who basically tells the grand jury what to do. It is not totally impossible, and it has happened, but basically the grand jury goes along with what the U.S. attorney or the state's attorney tells them to do. That's basically what happens. If you are called before the grand jury, you have a variety of options. One is actually, of course, to go and testify. The other options are to refuse to testify. If you refuse to testify, which is your right, the government can then give you immunity. And by immunity, they're basically saying no information that we get from you will be used against you. Of course, information that they get from you could be used against somebody else. And once again, this is not a question of is anybody really doing something or not? But I think the government likes to, one, get information and develop profiles and develop a whole understanding of what organizations, individuals, or movements are doing. And it's also a way to sow dissent. Will you testify? Will you not testify? Has this person given information? Has that person given information? Can we trust that person? Can we trust that or not trust that person? So whether a person testifies or not, they can be very destructive of a movement and a struggle. If you refuse to testify, and the government gives you immunity, and you still refuse to testify, the government basically has two options. They can then charge you with civil contempt, and the civil contempt means that you can go to jail for the length of the grand jury. Grand juries are generally 18 months long. They can be 24, and they can be extended. So for the examples I gave earlier, some people went, say, for 5 months, because the grand jury could have been in session already for, say, 13 months, there were 5 months left. Or, and the whole theory under civil contempt is you hold your own keys. Anytime you agree to testify, you will be released. Alternatively, as happened with the people called before the grand jury investigating the Puerto Rican independence movement, after, I believe, 18 months to almost or so, people who were in jail kept filing motions saying, we're not going to testify no matter how long you keep us in jail. And the judge said they won't testify and release them. The other alternative is that people can be charged with what's called criminal contempt, which obviously is a criminal case. Since it's a criminal charge, you then have the right to have a jury trial. The issue is, did you testify or not? So it is very hard to be found not guilty of that. Though interestingly, one example I know of is two Puerto Ricans who were subpoenaed from Puerto Rico to New York took the position they wouldn't testify. They had they were charged with criminal contempt. The first jury refused to convict them. The second jury refused to convict them. They got up and made very strong arguments about why they shouldn't be forced to testify. The third jury did convict them, and they got 2 years in jail. So that's sort of a brief nutshell of what the whole issue about the grand jury is. Can I get some water? Sorry. And I know that people have a series of questions. that maybe Jerry and I can try to address to get Molly. And before we get into that, Molly.
I was wondering if you could also just give like a brief overview of what is happening with the case.
Right. And that's one of the case questions that people have asked us to address. Okay, here's the brief overview. Pretty much on September 4th, the FBI went to the houses of people in Chicago, three people, Joseph, Joe Isabaker, and Stephanie Weiner, who are, I'm sure many people know. Thank you, sorry.
No problem.
And basically arrived at 7 in the morning and were there till probably about 6:30 or 7 at night. About 20 FBI agents came and went through the entire house. They ended up carting away about 30 boxes of literature, documents, related, unrelated to anything political. Joe and Stephanie happened to keep a lot of documents. And they have things from the 70s. Now, we all know that no documents from the 70s could have any relevance to anything that's happening now, except from a historical point of view. The FBI also went into Hatem Abudeya's house, obviously a Palestinian activist, I'm sure many people may or may not know, and took a lot of his documents. They went into the houses of 13 people or so up in Minneapolis, and then they kept going. So some people were also searched and raided on the Sunday and the Monday, and then two people in Michigan. Every person got a subpoena to appear before a grand jury here in Chicago that had been sitting since 09. So this is not a new investigation. The alleged purpose of the search was to find out information about the people's connections to an organization called Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and specifically the individuals who had been searched, or the houses had been searched and subpoenaed, their connections to support for the FARC in Colombia and the PFLP in Palestine. The government has not said too much more. So immediately, I think people took the offensive and said, obviously, what has happened is totally inappropriate, purely to intimidate people, harass people, etc. And there have been a series of press conferences and demonstrations, which, in my opinion, I think have really set the terms for what we think the FBI is doing. And it's basically saying it's challenging people's right to basically be opposed to the war. But I think another issue, I will just say, in my opinion, I think the government is trying to say you cannot be in solidarity with people in other places of the world. I personally think that's what's going on. It's not just about being an anti-war activist, but it's about saying we will not let you support anybody who's struggling around the world. That's my opinion. And that may not be what other people think, but that's what I think. The people who have been subpoenaed have consistently taken a position that they will not testify with the grand jury. It's illegitimate. The raids are illegitimate. The subpoenas are illegitimate. They have a right to be political activists, and they have a right to do what they're doing. So at this point, the first people were supposed to appear before the grand jury on October 5th. They've refused, as has everybody else. The government now has the option to then give them immunity, and people can then testify or not testify. They can then bring, if they refuse to testify, bring the civil contempt or bring the criminal contempt. Obviously, the government is looking for evidence so that they can bring indictments or criminal charges against people. And I am not saying that they have any reason or any basis to do that. It's not clear if they're going to charge any of the people who have been subpoenaed, some of them, other people. I don't know that. The government has not had a sit-down chat with me and said, hey, let me tell you what's going on. So I don't want to speculate. But that's, I think, pretty much what's going on. And we'll see what, and if there are more, there are four follow-up questions, we can follow up. But let's give Jerry a chance to answer, because people have been writing questions.
Here's one of the questions. Do cops or others need an actual warrant to enter your apartment? The answer is yes, unless you let them in. And that can be kind of tricky because they make you feel guilty for not letting them in. All right. And the thing is it's better not to let them in. All right. If they show up at your door or at your office and just say, and they'll start out this way by just saying, can we come in? Close the door behind you and sit on the porch and say, let's talk right here. And that's very uncomfortable. It's even more uncomfortable for them. Okay. Same thing with your office. You know, they summon you out to the reception area. Sit down or just stand in the reception area. Okay. Unless they show you a warrant, they don't have a right to come in. All right. They don't have the right, but they'll make you feel guilty about not letting them in. All right. And if you give them consent, they don't need a warrant. Okay. It can get kind of socially coercive, because I mean, most of us are nice people. So if somebody shows up at your front door, you want to say, come on in. You don't want to do that. Again, close the door behind you and what do you want? My lawyer is call 913, let me get it right. 913-0039. Feel free to use my name, Melinda's, Jim Fennerty, Molly Armour, any of us. Okay. Again, always throw it off on the lawyer. We're the bad cops. Okay? We're the bad cops. Okay? You can blame it on me and say, I ordered you not to talk to these people without talking to me first. And tell them I'm a real jerk and real mean. Okay?
Somebody wanted to know what's appropriate to say to friends, family, media, etc., regarding the FBI raids. Hey, it's out there in the public. I mean, anything that's been in the media, I think is fair to say. I actually don't think we don't have anything to hide in this case. I mean, people have done nothing wrong. It's, I think, who's done things wrong is the government, and I think that's what we should be talking about. And I think instead of sort of saying so much what we've done, actually, I would have the emphasis on what has the government done, what are they trying to do, and ensure that they don't have the impact that they're trying to have, which is to try to intimidate and harass us.
I mean, you know, if the media came to me about these, I'd say, well, Joe and Stephanie and Tom, they're really nice people, and I can't believe our government is persecuting them this way, because that's the truth. Don't answer defensively. You know, they've done nothing wrong. No, these are wonderful people. Okay, they're wonderful people who have dedicated their lives to serving others and helping people in need. And I just can't believe our government is picking on them like this. What's gone wrong when our government is attacking nice people like this? And hey, it's the truth. They're great people.
Somebody wants to know, is can you sue the FBI for harassment? Yes, the FBI can be sued, but there have to be pretty specific. I mean, it's hard to answer. You could challenge them for violation of First Amendment activities. So yes, the FBI can be sued, and then it depends on the specific facts.
The next one is, how does the Patriot Act 1 and 2 relate to the FBI raids and our rights in general? You know, the Patriot Act's a bad thing, but you know, when I do a full Know Your Rights presentation, you know what I call it? I call it War at Home, Domestic Counterinsurgency from the Alien and Sedition Act through the USA Patriot Act. I mean, the US government has always been schizo about this stuff, and the Alien and Sedition Act, you go back to the late 1700s, they were passing laws like the Patriot Act back then. It's not anything new. We've seen it before. We've dealt with it before. We've defeated it before. Don't be afraid of that thing. It is a formidable legal weapon for the government, but the Alien and Sedition Act didn't work. The USA Patriot Act isn't going to work either. It can make life difficult for us, but it can't beat us.
There was a question in the back, but there was no paper, and it was, do I have to talk to the FBI if they come to my door? Larry, what was the other part of that?
That's basically it.
If they come to me, do I have to talk to them?
Absolutely not, and you shouldn't. Absolutely not. You're under no obligation to speak to them. All right, and again, the easiest way to get them off your back is to throw them on us. That's what we're here for. You've got lawyers, okay? And if you tell them, I'm represented by the lawyers at the National Lawyers Guild, here's their number, okay? They'll take care of everything. And for your sake, we will take it off your back. It's the best way to get rid of them. It's the best way not to get in trouble. Throw it on us. That's what we're here for. It's our job. Okay? Don't talk to them without us.
Here's a question. If you are arrested or detained by police or FBI and they confiscate laptops, computers, blah, 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 can they use the emails or evidence against you? Yes. They can and they will. It's there in the public. I mean, they can take anything. I think people need Facebook, MySpace. People need to be very careful what's up there. And I'm going to give you an unrelated example. This is in a civil rights case where four black people who had been stopped, harassed, beat up by the police brought a civil rights case. It wasn't my case. And they got to trial. And one of their allegations was that the white cops had called them niggers. Sorry to use the word. And so the attorney for the city said, so you would never use that word, would you? And they said, no. They pulled up their Facebook, and guess what was all over their Facebook? And those people almost lost the case because of that. So I think people have to take very seriously. What you put out on anything can be picked up, used, and will be used against you by the government. And I'm not saying any, and it can be appear to be innocuous. I think people need to be very concerned about that.
Can I add to that question? I asked that question, sorry. What's your right?
Yeah, they can. Why don't you look at that one for a minute? Some of the best advice I was ever given in my life as a young man was never say anything over the wires that you wouldn't want a grand jury to overhear. All right? And this is a really common problem these days, okay? Understand, the internet runs over the wires, okay? The internet, the early visionaries of the web talked about how this was beyond borders and beyond the reach of the government. No. Mediated interactions and communications are much less secure than in-person interactions. We are more secure right now than anything you ever do on the internet. Everything you do on the internet leaves a permanent record. It can be retrieved. It can be spied upon. All right? People seem to think that the ordinary rules of life don't apply on the internet. They apply with a vengeance. All right? Anything that goes over the wires should be suitable for viewing by a grand jury. And if it's not, save it for in person. What other types of evidence can be used against us? You know, they can take just about anything and make you look bad. Okay? I don't know. You know, I'd use an example. Again, that thing I talked about why it's really important not to talk to them without us present. I'll give you an example, and it happened to a lot of people. It didn't happen to me just because I'm a lawyer who dealt with these people. Ireland, okay? When they did these things to the Irish back in the 80s, they'd show up, they'd sit you down, they'd say, do you know anybody in the IRA? And of course, you know, it's an underground organization, all right? So you don't know if anybody's in the IRA. They're not going to tell you, okay? And if you're careless enough to say no, all right? Well, if I did that, I'd say no, because I don't really know. All right? You know, next thing they do, they execute a search warrant on my house. Okay, they indict me for lying to an FBI agent. They pull out the photograph of me standing next to Jerry Adams and tell the jury, he said he didn't know anybody in the IRA, and here's Jerry Adams, and we all know he's in the IRA. Bingo. They can use anything against you, all right? A lot of, particularly when it comes to questions of what's in your head, that's determined by inference, because you're not going to testify. You're not going to say what's in your head. They can twist just about any fact to make you look bad. That's why you don't talk to them without a lawyer. Without a lawyer. Put a lawyer between you and the FBI, and things will go much better every time. You know, we got a question. Talk about the associates of Sami Al-Aryan who refused to talk to the grand jury. We don't know the facts of the case well enough to make a comment. I'm sorry. Do any of the other NLG lawyers here know? I'm sorry. You know, I don't know enough about the facts of that case to say for sure. I just don't know enough about the facts of that case. Okay.
Okay. Can you talk about the penalties for swearing at an agent? I don't think there. I don't know that there are any penalties. I just wouldn't advise it, frankly. I mean, it's kind of like, why do you want to sink to their level? I mean, it's sort of, you know. I just think they can be jerks, but so why are we going to be jerks? I think in general, I think we have to conduct ourselves the way we want us to be, not the way they may want us to be, or not how we think of them. I mean, don't you think we have to be the people we want to be?
And you know, that's another thing. I mean, I gave you the long title of my usual Know Your Rights seminar. The short title is How to Disarm a Police Officer. Okay? And you don't disarm a police officer by saying, you fucking pig! All right? The way you disarm a police officer is you use their training against them. Hi, Officer Jerry Boyle. What can I do for you? All right? What did I just do? It's a normal interaction, but it's also the way they're trained. You start with physical presence. You escalate to verbal direction and then to empty hand control. All right? Act like a normal, polite person. Don't let them get you excited. Because when you get excited, you get angry, you're not thinking straight. Hey, just call my lawyer. He'll take care of everything. Okay, that's much more likely to get them to leave right away. Just call my lawyer. He'll take care of everything. No problem, special agent, whatever your name is. And they're all special agents. Okay? Yeah, not so special. But yeah, you can swear at one. But in terms of getting them off your back as quickly as possible, kill them with kindness. Call my lawyer. He'll take care of everything for you. He's got all the answers. Okay?
We may have time for one more question because we don't want to intrude on the other program. And if, yes?
This is not necessarily about the FBI stuff, Melinda, but it's the stuff that was revealed in Pennsylvania about how the State Department of Homeland Security was contracting out to private companies surveillance of peace and justice organizations. And I was wondering if you knew anything about how that was broken, and can we find out if the state of Illinois is doing the same thing?
I don't know the answer to that, sorry.
I mean, I've read about that, Joe, that, you know, the state of Pennsylvania Department of Homeland Security. I'll review it. Joe was pointing out the situation where the state of Pennsylvania's Department of Homeland Security went to a private contractor that was kind of shady, all right, and paid them to do their political spying for them. Do you know something about this? Come on up. This is Amanda, one of our members.
Hi. I was just going to say, speaking to that for Illinois, the DePaul chapter of the National Lawyers Guild is working on some Freedom of Information Act requests to the state of Illinois, specifically about what companies they're using, how much you know, budgetary questions, that kind of thing. Obviously, they're not going to answer them just yet, but we're in the beginning steps of asking those questions. And we're also talking about putting together some sort of FOIA clinic so that community members can learn how to write FOIAs, because everyone has, you know, we're all entitled to that right. It shouldn't be like a secret how to write a FOIA. So, yeah.
I mean, I had some experience with this in the Irish community back in the 80s, where the FBI got the ADL to use some of their people to infiltrate all kinds of leftist organizations, including the Irish. All right, so they do that. There's an historical record for that. And I think what Amanda and her crew are doing at the law school is a really good idea, especially when we got a governor like Quinn. Who knows, we might just get a meaningful response to a FOIA request. I mean, in Pennsylvania, once it came out that they were using this shady organization to spy on people, the governor was like, oh my God, I'm sorry, this is gonna stop right away. It became a political embarrassment. You know, sometimes the left hand doesn't know what the right is doing. And sometimes you gotta prod the executive branch to keep an eye on its cops.
I think we have to stop it, right?
That's right. Okay, Jay.
Question. Well, the comment of criminal defense lawyer. One lawyer suggested that if we're ever, they knock on the door, we also get the agent's card, that you can read a lot from the card, so not only tell them you're a lawyer, but get their card. That was one thing. But my question was, a lot of us have been reading Michael Deutsch's 1984 article about grand juries being an instrument for the internment of activists, and I wondered if either of you knew if anything had changed. I mean, that's 25 years. If any of all the repressive measures, the effective death penalty, anti-terror, whatever, TEDPA, and Patriot Act, et cetera. Anything new, or is that still pretty?
You know, it's the same repressive tactics. Yeah. They give them different names, they use different statutes, but I mean, that's the thing about it. It is fairly predictable, and again, it's not law enforcement. It's counterinsurgency. That's the bad news. Good news is they can't win, and they know it, so long as we use our heads and stay together. We win. We win every time we win, so long as we use our heads and we stay together. And they know they can't win unless we make mistakes.